What is going on, crypto family? So me and the dog, we just finished interviewing Martin Bloomers, the CEO and co-founder of Git Protocol.
It's a pretty good time, right?
Yeah. Anyway, she liked it. I liked it. It was cool. He tells us how he went from being the counsel at the Dutch Central Bank to creating Git Protocol and Gut Tickets to address fraud, scalping, and the empowerment of artists and promoters of ticketing events. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right, let's go meet Martin. I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? So today we've got Martin Bloomers. He is the CEO and co-founder of Git Protocol with us, coming from Amsterdam. So appreciate you, buddy, coming on and telling us about yourself and all the cool stuff you're doing in the space.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me very much. So I'm Martin Bloomers. I'm 39 years of age. I used to be a corporate lawyer. I worked at the Dutch Central Bank. It was my first position, actually, as a lawyer. They learned me a little bit how money works. I thought, well, this can't be true. It was actually true. So then Bitcoin came along, then Ethereum came along. And especially when Ethereum came along, I thought, well, this could be useful to utilize in legal problems. And I just started thinking about what could be a good use case for blockchain.
Wow, there's a lot there, man. So you're a legal counsel for a central bank. So yeah, and now you're in crypto.
Yeah. And now I'm in crypto. Yeah, yeah. I think that's actually a very good way to get into the space, because especially when they learned me how money works, it was quite a thing, actually. I honestly couldn't believe that this was the way the world goes round.
What was your biggest takeaway, man? What was the thing that opened your eyes the most is working for a central bank and not understanding how money works and then them kind of pulling the curtain back? What was that moment for you that you just said, no way?
Well, they were very blunt about it. So they were completely honest, because, yeah, of course, it's all public information. As long as you educate yourself, you could actually know it. But I just had no idea. I just came straight out of university. I was very green, as we say. And they were very blunt about it. Well, like the Federal Reserve is just it's a private organization. I was like, how can that be? And then you start reading up about it, and it's actually it's actually true. So they were very blunt about it. It's a very slow organization. So I only worked there for about a year and a half. And then I thought, well, this is not for me. Then I just became a normal lawyer, but always was fascinated about crypto, especially when Ethereum came around. Because, yeah, smart contracts, it would have saved me a lot of costs not to go to the to court, basically, because there's no need to if the contract executes itself. And then I think I started thinking about what should I build on this. It took me like a year and a half or 2 years. And then actually I thought, well, concert tickets could be a very useful utility for a blockchain. And so we just started building it, not even with the idea that it should become a company. And it's 3.5 years ago. And now we're working with 30 people full time in Amsterdam and churning out a lot of tickets and ready to scale up.
Very, very cool, man. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, though, just to go back a little bit, where you said, you know, the Federal Reserve is a private company. It's about as federal as FedEx, right? So a lot of people don't know that. They don't know that a private corporation is printing the U.S. is the country's money. So that is quite a takeaway.
Yeah.
So you go from central banks, understanding how things work, to realizing the power of smart contracts, how they could minimize, you know, I guess, the legalities and need for attorneys and things like that, because they self-execute. So then you go into the ticket space. So maybe explain to us what Git Protocol is, what the tickets actually do, who can benefit from them, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I was just looking for the most, well, basically the simplest of contracts you could think of with very little room for interpretation. Actually, concert tickets is just a proof of a right to enter in an event. And once you've paid, you have the right to enter. So it's a very a simple and an understandable agreement. So I thought it was a good use case to start. So that's just where I started, and just thinking, well, if everybody can check the authenticity of a ticket on blockchain, we could prevent fraud. That was the first idea. And once we got that handled, we thought, hey, we could also eliminate scalping. So that was basically the second thing. And then we came to the conclusion that if you have a truly digital proof of a right to enter an event, you could do all kinds of things with it. And that's basically what we're building right now. So we can do, that's something we have right now, is you can do dynamic pricing, crowd management becomes very easy. And the amount of data you actually harvest from the event is about 4 or 5 times as much as you would have in a normal situation, because you have the whole audit trail of each ticket. So basically what it boils down to, if you make a ticket truly digital and you control the ecosystem it exists in, and in our case, the ecosystem is blockchain transparent, there's like a Christmas tree of business models waiting for us, which we are gradually exploring and expanding.
Gotcha. So Git Protocol, I guess, is it more along for people that are maybe concert promoters, the people that actually put on the events? So the people that put on the events, are they the ones that use your protocol to then issue tickets to the public?
So the protocol, what we hope the protocol is going to be, is a backend technology for other primary ticketing sellers to use. So basically what we hope is that Ticketmaster is going to use our product. Never going to happen, of course, but that's what you're hoping for. And what we did is, so nobody in their right mind is going to use a protocol that is just built by some guys who have no experience in the business and have no idea actually what to build. So what we did is we founded a separate company, which is also a primary seller. It's called Guts Tickets. And Guts Tickets is basically the shopping window of what the protocol can do. And Guts Tickets is quite successful, I'm proud to say, in Holland. And what we basically did is blockchain is all about cutting out the middlemen, of course. We just went to the artist and said, well, you're the creator of the content. You should dictate how your fans are treated and who sells your tickets. And they actually agreed, multiple of them. Actually, I think all of the major independent artists are now signed with Guts. And it gave us a lot of traction. And now we're expanding to South Korea. We're in talks with multiple countries in Europe and in the Middle America. So now we're really in the expanding phase, and we're hoping to get other international ticketing companies to use our tech. And so far, it's going really well.
It's great. I know here in the U.S., so it's a little bit different. I know that a lot of the, some of the concert halls, the arenas, things like that, they make the people that put the conference or the event on use like Ticketmaster. You know, you can only use that kind of ticketing system. And then when you buy from like Ticketmaster or SeatGeek or, I don't know, maybe StubHub, that's what we have here in the U.S. Is fraud really a problem there? Or is this like, you know, for like at the event itself, people trying to scalp tickets? Because usually when you have somebody that goes online and they buy from StubHub or SeatGeek or Ticketmaster, there's not usually like a fraud problem there, but there might be a price problem there where it costs a lot more money. So what does this exactly address for people here in the U.S.? Is it cheaper for them to use and it's just safer? And how do you get around like the arenas and conferences and things like that that only allow the people that throw the events to actually use like Ticketmaster?
Yeah, so there are a few things I should address in this question. So first of all, Live Nation and thus Ticketmaster, they are the ticketing behemoth. They control the whole market. And how did they control the whole market? They just bought up everything. So they're also buying up the venues because their system basically is technically inferior to basically everybody else's. So the only way they could keep on growing was to buy all the venues because they have money. So that's what they did, which of course is a very smart strategy. So that's the first thing. We also have this in Holland. Well, basically you have this problem everywhere where Live Nation and Ticketmaster is active. So they just buy venues, they buy promoters, they buy artists even. The thing that we solve is fraud, which is it occurs about 2 to 5% of the cases here in Europe. So it's a quite a large number, but it's not like the killer utility of our protocol. The scalping actually is, because once a ticket is truly digital, you can program it every way you want to. So you could just dictate how it should behave in the primary market or in the secondary market. There's really no limits. So if and when an artist is in the position, he could dictate what kind of ticketing system is used, and it even succeeded for this in a few of a Ticketmaster venues, then the artist is able to program what the ticket prices should be. So he could say the minimum price of the ticket is X, the maximum ticket price is Y, And everything in between is fine with me, or I keep it on the same price, or I want a different price in the primary market and a different price in the secondary market. And one time we did it for a very famous artist in Holland. We just let the price move up, and all the extra surplus went to charity. All those things are possible. So you could basically, you can dictate the market rules. And we believe that content creators are very needy of that power, basically.
Gotcha. So like smart tickets of sorts. Do you have the ability to take existing tickets? Like, you know, say there's a, I don't know, a Rolling Stones concert and it's through Ticketmaster, Live Nation, and they've already printed the tickets. Can you then authenticate those tickets and put them into your guys' protocol as well?
Yeah, well, at this moment, no. But we're working very hard on a sort of a blockchain add-on for other ticketing companies to use. So once the ticket is actually printed, so that makes it static, that makes it tangible, then it's very hard to do. But what we have now is for external tickets, as we call it, it's possible to check the authenticity. So there we solve the fraud problem again. But if you have a tangible ticket, it's very hard to solve the scalping problem. But you could layer on the tech of the protocol on an existing system. And what you then can choose to do is not distribute the static primary ticket, if you understand what I'm saying. So then let's say in the, for this example, Ticketmaster would just choose not to distribute the original ticket, but only the digital twin of the ticket, which basically is the Get Protocol ticket, will live in the ecosystem. And then you have all the possibilities again. But it's very good remark of you. That's something we're building right now. We hope to have that done in about second half of 2020. But that is purely for other ticketing companies to make it easier for the onboarding.
For sure. You just got to figure out a way to cancel out the paper QR code versus the digital. Otherwise, you'll end up creating a secondary ticket.
Yeah, so. Exactly. But we think if we, like we've shown in Holland, we've added a lot of value for the artists and for the promoters. If we just keep on doing that, we're just winning every day, inch by inch, then a sane primary ticket seller will just choose not to distribute the original static ticket, because why would he if there's no downside on not doing it?
Gotcha. And then is Git Protocol using an ERC-20? You guys have your own token. What's it used
yeah.
for?
Yeah, at this moment we have a ERC-20 token. It's a purely a utility token. So basically what we do is we have a walled garden, as I stated. So people with tickets can play around within our walled garden as much and as long as they want to. Basically what the token provides us is a medium of exchange within the walled garden. And it also is a gatekeeper for people. So we can basically dictate how they should behave within the ecosystem. Those are the two major utilities for our token. It basically means that every time you want to interact with a ticket, blockchain will ask you to give some tokens for that interaction with the smart ticket. And we burn a little bit of the token every time an event cycle is closed. So at the end, the validator collects all the GET that is on the tickets, and it burns a portion of them. So guest becomes more scarce the more we use it. And we think that's a sound model for, at least a couple of hundred years.
Gotcha. And then as far as like purchasing tickets through you guys' protocol, can we use, you know, like regular fiat, or does it have to go through your token?
Yeah. Actually, like GUTS is there's some mention of blockchain, but we market it as a non-crypto non-crypto company, because it should be like, I very much believe that crypto should be like, you have to remove all the friction, and people are so spoiled with all the amazing software that's being built. So what we had to do is we had to make buying tickets easier as all the competition and that meant that all the cryptos under root. My aunt is not going to install MetaMask and buy some tickets. It's just not going to happen. So I think the road to major adoption is make it as easy as possible for everybody to use.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So tell us more about yourself, man. Like, you have any hidden talents or skills when you're not an attorney or building, you know, I don't know, I guess the next ticket protocol the world's to use?
Well, so should be a big surprise, but my the company consumes like a lot of my time. And when I'm not working, I do some running. So I run some marathons just to get my head straight. But this battle we are fighting against the ticketing behemoth is an all consuming thing. And we got so lucky with the timing and the idea, because tickets on blockchain, you know, it's just gonna work. Somebody is going to become the industry standard with tickets on blockchain, because it's a scarce digital asset. It's basically, if it's not a decentralized digital currency, this is the next obvious use case. So somebody's going to win this race, and we're trying our very, very best to become the industry standard in blockchain tickets, because in 5 years, this is happening.
Yeah, like you said, you're a marathon runner, so you're running the race right now. Like, what's...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What's like the furthest marathon you've run so far in distance, and like miles or kilometers?
Oh, I ran 4 actual marathons, so that's... 42 kilometers, 195 meters, or something like that.
Oh wow, yeah, because we have like I'm like one of those hobby runners. I just run 3 miles a day just so I don't get fat. But yeah, like, you know, 5Ks and stuff like that here. So you're saying it's a marathon's 42K, something like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. You done 4 of those? How are your knees?
Yeah. Still good, actually. Still good? Yeah. You get used to it. And I gotta say, after like 30K, you're done with running. I can tell you that. But I just like pushing boundaries. I like to push myself, and especially like in the space I sort of wound up in the ticketing space. There's so much competition, and the whole market is so dishonest. It just gives me energy to just, you know, be the rebel there. So that's just, yeah, it's something that is in my personality. I don't like working for a central bank, because it's too, yeah, mainstream, basically. I just like, stirring things up. And we think we're doing a great job, actually. So especially with South Korea, which I visited quite often now, it's an awesome country. There's no Ticketmaster there. And we're just, the market there is way better than it is in Holland, and now expanding to that is like a dream come true. And I think we should perceive it as a marathon. So it's just keep on running and keep on going, no matter what.
For sure, man.
And we're just that, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like with all the things you're kind of trying to do and you're up against, and all the I don't want to call it like aggressiveness you have to the traditional systems. You know, you got to run the marathons to get that all out of you. So, what's your favorite running shoes, man?
Oh, I have Asics.
Asics, okay,
yeah,
awesome. Your Brooks.
Yeah, I did. But I like the Phantom Fit. So I want nothing. I don't want to feel anything on my feet, which is impossible after 40K.
Yeah. 40K. That's pretty. It's pretty crazy.
But you only run short distances, right?
3 miles a day, every day. But I mean, it adds up. It takes a toll. That's, you know, good, I go through shoes, you know, like every 2 months. But that's just so I don't get fat.
Yeah, well, you should try a little bit longer. It really it clears your mind. It really does. It's once you get in the rhythm, it's sort of gets addictive.
Gotcha. What about movies, man? What's your favorite movie?
It's a French movie, but there's a English translation. It's called A Prophet, about a dude who goes to prison basically as a loser and goes out like the kingpin. You ever seen it?
I haven't seen it, man, but it sounds like a good story. I've seen a couple movies similar to that.
Yeah, definitely is.
That was one. Was it Will Ferrell and Chris? It wasn't Chris Rock. Maybe it was Kevin Hart or something like that. I forget. I can't remember. Or maybe I can't remember the name of it, but it was Will Ferrell. It was pretty funny. Something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, this is no Will Ferrell movie, I can tell you that, which I also very like very much. But you know, in Amsterdam, only with the right ingredients, then it's very good to watch, of course.
Awesome, man. All right, last question for you, so you can get on with your night. If you had a time machine, you go forward in time as far as you want, you go back in time as far as you want, but you had to stay there, you couldn't come back, when and why would you go? I've heard all kinds of different answers over the years.
Yeah. So I'm sort of a history buff, but that would be nice because then I would know what's going to happen. So that would be boring, but you could exploit it very, very nicely. That would be nice. No. I would go to the future, and then I would go to the era where I would believe that we found a technical solution for the energy problem. So basically, I think nuclear fusion would be the best guess. And they always say it's about 30 years away. So I would say, just to be sure, 80 years in the future, I would still hold my cryptos. That, well, some coin has got to do well. And no more energy problems. So cleaner earth. Yeah, I think that would be the mark. 80 years in the future.
80 years in the future. All right. So then we got clean energy, and hopefully your crypto has skyrocketed.
Exactly. So what would you do? I'm curious.
Me? I would probably just go back, probably to, I guess probably somewhere around 2009 or 10 when my father-in-law was, but not for Bitcoin, because I've been in Bitcoin since 2011. But no, because before my father-in-law passed. So I'd get to spend some more time with him. And then I would also make some other decisions along the way. So that's probably what I would do for the sentimental side, just to hang out with my pops again. But
That's cool. Yeah. All right. Cool. That's a fair answer. Yeah.
All right. So cool, Martin, it's been awesome hearing about you, and how you went from central banks to crypto. That is, I have not heard that before. That is pretty awesome. And it's great to see what you're doing there at Git. So make sure you keep us posted, man. Appreciate
you. We'll do. We'll stay in touch.
You got it. Take care. God bless. Hey, welcome back, everybody, and a big thanks to Martin. I have a little bit of experience in the space, so it's going to be very interesting to see how big of a dent or good old gut punch that Martin and his team can put into the ticketing industry. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Until the next one, talk to you soon.